This time on Poll Hub, the students here at Marist University are heading off to break. But before they do, we're turning the show over to them. Maybe because the topic is how Gen Z is so different in a bunch of ways from older Americans. Why is that? Well, we're going to the source to find out. And then we all join back for a holiday-themed fun fact featuring one of my favorite traditions ever. I just learned about it, and I think this year I might try it. And hi, everybody. Welcome to Poll Hub. I'm J.D. Dapper.
I'm AJ Gambino.
I'm Tommy Rogers.
I'm Sylvia Weiser.
I'm Julia Tartaglia.
I'm Mary Griffith.
And I'm Lee Merengoff.
Well, that's a whole lot of students in our intro. I wonder why. Well, it is finals week here at Marist University, and these students that you just heard are all heading home shortly for the holiday break, and they came up with a great segment. Julie actually came up with a great segment about Gen Z, and we thought, you know, we could have all us olds on and talk to a couple of Gen Z, or we could just let Gen Z talk about the findings themselves. So that's what we're going to do. So, Tommy, let's start with you and some of the data that's been found here. Why don't you start and tell us some of these data points, and then let's talk about it.
So according to a Gallup poll, 40% of women aged 15 through 44 say they would move abroad permanently if they could, compared to only 19% of men in the same group, which is a dramatic rise from 2014, when only 10% said that. This 21-point gender gap is the largest Gallup has ever recorded in this trend. So Sylvia, would you like to move abroad in the future?
So I studied abroad last fall, and I lived in Costa Rica for 4 months, and it was an amazing experience. I would 1,010% go back. That being said, I'm not sure that I would move abroad permanently. I think that that's something that maybe I would do maybe in like my late 20s, maybe for a year or so, not necessarily in Costa Rica, maybe somewhere else. But I think that ultimately I will end up moving back to the United States and probably like the East Coast. I feel like I have work I have to do here.
Julie, what about you?
I am going to study abroad next semester, which I'm very excited for. I'm going to spend 4 months in Italy, and I'm really looking forward to it and getting out of the country in that sense. But same thing, I don't think I'd ever move there permanently. I think I'd have a permanent residence on the East Coast. You know, I'm very comfortable here.
Yeah, I don't know. I definitely would. I'm open to the idea of moving away, but at the same time, it's like, I have so much here. I have all my family here. You know, I still go to school here, but in the future, it's definitely a possibility if we have work abroad. It just depends. But AJ, what do you think?
Yeah, I guess I'm the contrarian of the group, because I would definitely strongly consider the opportunity if it was put in front of me. I think it would depend on where and what the reasoning is. Like, if I was being given a job that I would really want to take, then I would probably do it. But I've also studied abroad, and I really enjoyed the like differences in life in other countries compared to the US in some ways. So I would definitely be interested in moving back.
Is there a place in the world that you'd want to go more than others?
I would say probably like Western Europe would be like the easiest like transition, also like what I know the most because I studied abroad there. But if it was like a non-permanent position, then I would probably consider going like anywhere if the opportunity was put in front of me. But like permanently, it would definitely get narrowed down.
I mean, that's the question Gallup asks, is permanently move abroad.
Yeah.
I do question whether 40% of women 15 to 44 or even 19% of men would really do that. The numbers are very small in terms of Americans who leave America and move abroad permanently. But, you know, who knows? It's interesting that the gender gap is not reflected in this group, though. I mean, you guys are kind of the flip of that. But one of the other pieces of data you found, Julia, was the number of people living at home still. We've heard a lot about this, right? I mean, this has been in the news a lot for the last, like, you know, 8 or 10 years, certainly after COVID or during COVID, people living with their parents until they're 25 or even 30. There's TV shows about it, right? Tell us some of that data, and then let's talk about that.
So Pew Research shared that 18% of adults aged 25 to 34 live in a parent's home, with men significantly more than women who do that. Men is 20% versus women 15%. And then broadening that view, the U.S. Census data also shared that about 1 in 3 adults ages 18 to 34 now live with at least one parent, which is a pattern shaped by rising housing costs, student debt, and shifting cultural norms. That's also consistent with a pattern of young people increasingly living at home. In 1971, just 8% of 25 to 34-year-olds lived in multi-generational households, compared with roughly 17% in 2021, according to Pew Research.
So what do you think is happening? I mean, you guys still are in college. Are any or all of you going to move back in, like, when you graduate? I mean, so to be fair, I moved back home after college because I was going to grad school. I took a gap year. And so I did move back home for 6 very difficult months. But that was a long time ago. That was 1984 or whatever. It seems like, at least for economic reasons, things have really changed and a lot more kids are going to be moving back home. Is that your sense?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I'm done. Basically, I have 2 finals I need to submit still, and then I'm graduated and I will be moving back home. It's a little bit different just because I think that I am taking like the spring semester to move back home, and then I'll be going into law school next fall, where hopefully I will be able to move out. But it's kind of in the place where if I get accepted to a law school that's in Rhode Island, and there's only one of them, and that's like the best option for me, like I will stay at home because it makes the most sense economically. And, you know, my parents are going to be cool housemates, hopefully. So,
well, Tommy, do you see yourself like living at home well into the future?
Yeah, it really does depend on where work is. Like, I would prefer to live at home because then I'm saving so much money. But then at the same time, it's like, you know, you get away from your parents. But I don't know, like, I don't mind living with them because my mom will, like, cook for me. She does my laundry and all that kind of stuff. So I'm like, you know, it's really not a horrible thing. But, you know, so
we need to get her. We apparently need to get her on the show so we can get her side. But
I don't know. You definitely do have to grow up at some point. And I don't know when that's going to happen, but we'll see. AJ, what do you think?
Yeah, I definitely see myself living at home after I graduate. And I think it's just like easy because I'm from Long Island. So if I hopefully was able to get a job in the city, it would just make the most sense for me to live at home and not spend $1 million on rent when I probably wouldn't be able to afford it.
And Julia, what about you? Is that when I know it's for all of you other than Sylvia, who's facing this in 4 days, the rest of you, it's a little further out. But what do you think? Like, again, these are people who are living into their late 20s at home. A lot more people are doing that. Is that something you see in your future?
Definitely not. I think, like, I know I'm only in my junior year, but I've definitely started to think about what I want to do after graduation. And I think I definitely am looking to work in the city. But where I live in Connecticut, my very small town, I'm really far from the city, like the actual commute. So I think I'd have to move somewhere, probably not in the city because it is crazy expensive, but somewhere close outside of it, I think would be my best option to doing that.
Yeah.
But definitely not living at home into 20s. Yeah.
Yeah. Try and avoid that. One of the other defining characteristics of your generation has been, and there's a big generation, I mean, excuse me, a big gender gap on this, is wanting to marry and have kids. This is something that, this is not an American thing, obviously. This is, you know, people have married and had kids throughout all of history. But it has also been seen in other Western industrialized countries, like in Japan, in China, in Western Europe. But Gen Z, you guys are really outpacing the field here in your desire or lack of desire to marry and have kids. Sylvia, why don't you read through some of that data? Tell us some of that data, and then let's talk about that.
Yeah, so an NBC News and SurveyMonkey poll of Gen Z adults kind of showed this really stark divide between men and women in terms of like viewing having children as a success rate. So for Gen Z men who voted for Trump, they rate having children as one of the most important things in their personal definition of success. On the other hand, Gen Z women who voted for Harris ranked having children as the second least important thing in their personal definition of success, which is really interesting, not only to see the gender divide, but also that political divide as well.
Yeah.
And overall, many Gen Z men and women agree that the top like 3 ambitions or measures of success are having a fulfilling job, having money to do things that they want to do, and achieving financial independence. So like for me, I guess I would like to achieve all of that sort of stuff, and then maybe I can consider having children. But I'm definitely, that's not forefront of my mind. But how about you, Tommy?
Yeah, I
actually, I never really want to get married or have children. I don't know. I just kind of always been that way. I kind of just want to be by myself.
In Fox Hub, though, you are like the person every student wants to be. So, you know, you should use that to your advantage, even if you don't want it, you know, maybe, you know.
I don't know. We'll see. I don't know. Like, I've talked to my brother about it a little bit, and he says, like, as you mature, like, you'll come to see that, you know, maybe marriage is a good thing. But as of right now, do not want to get married.
I definitely want to get married at some point. Like Sylvia said, that would probably come after I've achieved some of those first couple of things. Like, I have a good job, I'm settled in that, I'm financially independent, all those things. But I definitely think being married is really important to me. I think it's great to have like a life partner and like go through life with that person, and like they're, you know, the closest person to you. And I think like then building a family off of that would be great as well.
This question was also about kids, though, too. And it, you know, in a Pew poll, just over a fifth, 21% of women who do not have kids between 18 and 34, so mainly Gen Z, they don't want to be parents ever. That's compared to just 15% of men, and 57% of men in that group do want to have children someday, versus only 45% of women. There does seem to be a gender gap, as you mentioned, the partisan gap too, but a gender gap about having kids, not just marrying. Sylvia, what is it, I mean, among your friends, you know, and in your world, is that something that, I guess you probably don't talk about having kids in college, but I don't know, is that something that ever comes up that you ever think about?
I mean, in all honesty, like, that definitely is something that my friends and I have been considering recently. I actually have a couple just good friends from high school and middle school that you keep in touch with on social media. And I've seen them get married and have kids, and they're really happy, and they have good jobs, and like, they're killing it in life. But for me and my friends, a lot of us are considering grad school. I have friends who are going to be going to grad school and then to med school too. So it just seems like we have a longer timeline before we can really fully consider maybe having kids. On the other hand, though, I do have friends who are graduated and who are trying to buy houses with their significant others right now, trying to move out of their parents' houses. Like, kids are in the near future for them, and we're only separated by a couple of years. So there's just really, I think, kind of just like a wide variety. And it really just depends on what each individual person's track is in life.
Yeah. AJ, what about you and your friends? Is this, I mean... Does it come up having kids with guys in college? I don't know. It never did with me, but I don't know.
Well, most of my friends are women, and I would agree with what Sylvia was saying. And I agree with the sentiment earlier of just like, I think that's just becoming something that people think about way more down the line after these other like priorities are fulfilled. And I think like the data really reflects the sentiment that I've experienced amongst my friends and myself too.
So the other data that we talked about, and we've already kind of hit upon it, is the marry or not marry. And real briefly, what we were talking about was that a 2024 Pew poll showed that young adults are delaying marriage. So among those 25 to 29, only 29% were married in 2024. That was down from 50% in 1993. So a huge, huge drop. Do you guys think that's economics? I mean, looking ahead, you're all about to graduate some sooner than others. Is so much of this about economics and what we used to consider markers of kind of adulthood? You know, you buy a house, you get your job, you move out of your parents' house, you rent an apartment, you buy a house, maybe you get married or you have a partner, maybe you have kids or you don't, but you buy your car. All of these things are kind of markers towards adulthood. It does seem like all of those are getting pushed out a little bit, at least from the way you're talking. Is that just economics, or is there more to it than that?
I definitely think that almost all of it has to do with economics right now. I mean, because everything's so expensive. So just naturally, everything's going to get pushed back.
I was just going to bring up, I think that our generation is a little bit more progressive and open. So like the concept of moving in with a significant other before getting married isn't that unheard of. And having a wedding is expensive. Like, that's definitely an expense to consider. I know, like I mentioned, like my friends who are considering moving in with their partners are trying to save for weddings down the line and things like that. So I think maybe for our generation, getting married and like having that official title isn't as big of a deal when we can still do all of the other things that a married couple would. Like, it's not completely abnormal to live with your partner before you're married, or even have a kid with your partner before you're married. Like, you don't need the title of husband or wife to do all those same things that I guess could be measures of success as well.
Yeah, I think Sylvie made a good point there, but I would probably echo what Tommy said in that I think it is a lot more of an economical decision for a lot of people now, especially I think like people see prices going up, inflation, everyone's like really a lot more paying a lot more attention to money and their money and just keeping track of that. So they want to prioritize that when they're thinking about their future. And I think a lot of people, even if they're not upfront about it, would consider like being financially independent a requirement before they went and got married. And like that is like weddings are a huge expense. And I mean, there are a wide range of like what you could spend for a wedding. But
I got married at City Hall in New York and we went to lunch. So it was the cost of a lunch. But, you know, that was different. So, AJ, you mentioned money when you mentioned about, you know, living back with your parents and stuff. Do you think this is, you know, largely economic, this kind of Gen Z vision of the future?
Yeah, I definitely concur with what everyone is saying about money. I think it's kind of the root of all of these issues, or just like changes in sentiment rather than issues, I guess. But I think it's something that like our generation is kind of like witnessing, people who are a little bit older than us, and like the economic state that they're in, and sort of like adjusting our priorities because of it.
Let me go around one last time before we go and just ask one last question to each of you. And I'll start with you, AJ, since we finished with you. What do you think the biggest difference is between your generation and older generations?
I think that the access that we had to the internet from a younger age, or to social media from a younger age, like probably like made the biggest impact on us compared to like other generations, and then like it probably will make us more similar to like future generations.
And Julia, what do you same question? What do you think the biggest difference is between your generation and older generation?
I would probably say values. I mean, we've been talking all segment about this, but I think older generations value maybe that more traditional sense of like moving along life. Like you said, like you buy your car, you get a job, get your apartment, then you get a house and you get married, like then you have kids. Like that's a very traditional trajectory. But I think our generation is a lot more open to, like we said, like traveling first, or kind of prioritizing a non like traditional way of like moving about life and kind of doing whatever we think is best for us first.
And Tommy, same question.
I think that money is definitely the biggest problem, because like I feel like our generation, if money wasn't an issue, like we would still have that traditional mindset, like nothing would have changed. But since money is such a big issue, I think that's why all these changes have happened.
And Sylvia, since you are going to be not one of our producers or college students or anything in 3 days, this is kind of a goodbye. Let's let you have the last word on this. What do you think the biggest difference is between your generation and older generations?
Yeah, I really like what both AJ and Julia said, and I kind of want to combine their answers, I guess. But I think that the internet and just kind of modern forms of technology and modern ideas and new values have kind of allowed our generation to explore and to almost test the extent of how far they can go in breaking the status quo. And I think has connected these like-minded individuals, and has kind of been able to say like, hey, it is okay that you're not doing this quote unquote more traditional path in life, and you're able to still see success in other areas, which is reassuring for me as an almost graduate that there's not just one path to success.
Well, you guys are the next boomers. And I mean that in that you're a huge generation compared to the ones that have come before you. And the boomers had an outsize and not always positive, and this is, I'm a boomer, I'm the very tail end of the boomers, but not always a positive impact on the world. You guys have a chance maybe to do it better, having viewed our successes and failures. So interesting segment, really interesting to see what you guys think about these differences and how things shape up. Fun fact time.
Okay, and now we enter into that open and lively discussion called the fun fact. And the question this time is from a USA Today, October 1990 poll question of Americans. And it is, when do you and your family open most of your holiday presents? And the winner for this in the national poll was Christmas morning at 60%, followed by Christmas Eve at 25%. Christmas night or afternoon at 6%. Seems like a long wait for that. And then it varies.
Those 6%, they can't possibly have kids.
Yes, yes. Yeah, yeah. I want a present. And people have some variable times at 8%. So I'm going to start off. I don't know. Mary, I'm going to start off with you because you have kids also, as people know. And so you have an added pressure, I think, on this.
Well, if anyone doesn't know I have kids who listens to this podcast, I think they're probably, But yes, so I actually have lots of thoughts on this question. We do open our presents after Santa visits on Christmas morning. But growing up, for me, that wasn't always the case. We had Santa drop into our house on Christmas Eve. Oh. And so as a kid, we opened our presents from Santa on Christmas Eve, and then we went to our stocking on Christmas morning. And I honestly always thought that was a bit of a letdown. So I was adamant that when I had kids, we would open our presents on Christmas morning. And as I got older, as a teenager, I opened my presents on Christmas morning because I was insistent about that. But, I think there are some cultural aspects to this as well. I came from an Italian family. And so Christmas Eve, when I was younger, was a bigger deal. We didn't always do the fish dinner. That wasn't big. But, our family, when I was much younger, did get together. So there was that aspect to it as well. And then, of course, we do get together on Christmas Eve. So there are some presents being exchanged on Christmas Eve. But in terms of my immediate family, Christmas morning, hands down, is when most presents get opened.
Sounds like you have lots of presents that you're dealing with at different stages. Jay, what do the Dappers do?
Yeah, so we had I never really thought about it until this question came up just now. We had a kind of a regimented morning set or evening and morning setup. I think my dad was an engineer. And my guess is that this was a little bit of his influence. So Christmas Eve at night, we could open one present, but not a big present. Couldn't be one of the big ones. You could open one. There were no stockings were out, but there were no gifts in the stockings. And then we went to bed and left out cookies and a glass of milk for Santa. And then Santa filled the stockings. The gifts were already under the tree, so we already had an eye on the big ones, the cool ones. Oh, who's that? We could have looked at those over the prior days. And then in the morning, we were allowed to open our stockings and maybe a gift under stockings, but nothing else. Then we had to first have breakfast, which was a big production. And then once breakfast is like, come on, let's go. No, we need to have French toast. And then finally, we would get to open the present like at 10 o'clock in the morning. Wow. And of course, I had been up, all my sisters and I had been up since 6. So very regimented, but I got to think it must have been my dad.
If we make it to 10 o'clock or 7 o'clock in my house on Christmas morning, it's a big deal. It's usually like 5 a.m. The kids are jumping in on the beds and trying to.
My parents knew that I had grown up when the Christmas morning that I didn't get out of bed at 6 a.m. And they came in. My mom popped her head in and said, are you getting up? She's like, I'm going to sleep in a little bit. I was in third grade. So my third grade, I had already.
I'd already lost
some of the magic.
All right, let's turn in. We've had discussions earlier about different generations, and now we're going to switch gears. Sylvia, when do the Wisers open?
So for the Wisers, on Christmas Eve, what usually happens is that we'll get home from like church service or dinner, and there will be some packages on the couch, and those packages have Christmas pajamas in them. The dogs also on occasion get Christmas pajamas, which is very exciting.
Of course.
And then we do a pajama race to put them on. It's a big ordeal. Very loud, very chaotic, very fun.
I love this tradition.
It's awesome. And then
that's awesome.
No other Christmas presents until the next day. And then we do have a rule. I think last year it was 8 a.m. My brothers had to wait to wake me up. I sleep in, unfortunately, for them. But in the past, it used to be 7. And, we all go into my parents' room. And then we have to wait, and then we all have to go down the stairs together. And the dogs are all always very excited as well because they get to run down and freak out a little bit.
Well, this is fascinating. There's so many different formulations. But AJ, Tommy, when you guys jump in and give us another perspective, there's been no similarity other than presents end up getting opened.
So, Jay, we have a very, very similar Christmas where everything's underneath the tree. Christmas Eve, and you get to pick one gift, and that we would always do that. And then Christmas morning, we would do stocking stuffers, But before we did anything, my dad needs one cup of coffee. We can't start if he doesn't have a coffee.
See, there's all these things.
Yeah. It's very, very interesting. Yeah, yeah. I understand now, you know, drinking coffee. But growing up, I didn't understand. And then we would open up everything. And then we would have breakfast after.
Is there any clearance in any of the households to make sure Santa actually wasn't running late on the delivery? I mean, I would think that you want to make sure that, you know, the cookies have been eaten that were left for him.
Yeah,
I think.
Well, if you aren't on Santa Prime, you know, delivery can be delayed.
there you go. For example, okay.
And sometimes those presents getting put together in Santa's workshop take a little bit longer.
Yes, the wrapping. Yeah. As someone who's not usually a Christmas, we sort of, you'll find ways to get some presents into this, but it's not certainly the kind of not growing up with them. But yes, sir.
AJ, here.
Oh, we do a big Christmas boarding present opening with like my sisters and I. We each will have like our own little like section under the tree. And then we used to like race down the stairs when we were younger, like super early, but now we just kind of walk.
Too many injuries.
Do you open any presents on Christmas Eve?
We'll open like presents from like other relatives, like who we are seeing like on Christmas Eve, because we'll go to like my dad's side and then we'll get presents from them, but we won't open like parental presents until Christmas.
So Lee, I did think that this was somewhat of a culturally insensitive question, because they didn't first ask, do you celebrate Christmas? Mm. And then ask this question of people who celebrate Christmas. Mm. There are a lot of Jewish people and Islamic people and lots of other people in this country who don't celebrate Christmas. And I thought it was a little odd that, I mean, it's 1990. Yeah. It doesn't seem like it's that long ago.
No.
Were you surprised by that?
Yeah, well, no. Well, yes and no. Because Hanukkah, which, of course, is 8 days or eight
and
nights.
Eight gifts, at least.
And so, you know, that when I was a kid growing up, there was one per day. But, you know, my parents' friends would sort of get things. And, you know, there was never the concept of hierarchy of to the present. So, for example, you were saying, Jay, about, you know, the big present, the little present. I mean, we didn't have any of that. And it usually was some kind of thing, you know, that didn't relate to the baseball. So it was, you know, a book, you know. You know, clothing, you know, things that, you know, I could definitely live without at that point. But yeah.
So in your world, the big present would have been a signed Mickey Mantle baseball.
Yeah, but I don't recall any. I mean, the birthday is a bigger deal individually, you run that one up. But I don't remember, you know, the Hanukkah/Christmas as being a massive amount of, obviously, no tree involved. So, I mean, Santa doesn't actually come down the chimney. I mean, there's a very different kind of, although a lot of you didn't mention the Santa arrival, and I was concerned about that from just a timings aspect. But but anyway, so lots of presents, I think. I hope everybody is going to go through this. I love all the different ways this is done. There doesn't seem to be a text on how to do this. So it seems to be tradition, which should be what reigns supreme during the holidays anyway.
And for the students, this is the last we're going to see the students until next year. Some will be returning. Sylvia, however, will not. She is graduating in 3 or 4 days here. So Sylvia, thank you so much for everything. You've been a short-term producer on the podcast, but super influential. And in case those of you in the Poll Hub world don't know, there is a new podcast, a video podcast called Fox Hub.
Oh.
Fox Hub is a student-produced video podcast, mainly for students at Marist. But you can see it on YouTube on our channel, and it is a production of these three in particular, Sylvia and AJ and Tommy Thomas, who put it together. So Sylvia, thanks for helping to drive that forward as well. And enjoy your vacation. It's a long break.
Thanks for having me.
You're awesome, Sylvia. We love you.
When did you become a senior? I have you still about in my mind as a, you know, maybe a second semester sophomore, but it's like,
I know, it's crazy.
It seems like going yesterday, we were up in New Hampshire. Yeah, no, it's been lots of fun having you in the neighborhood. And as you know, you never really leave. You just take a sort of a break from Marist. But we, you know, once Marist, always Marist. And I know you have some big plans in the law area. So we'll be following you.
We'll be hiring her.
Perfect.
With any luck, not for any criminal complaints or anything.
Yeah, I didn't like the sound of that initially. The old indictment thing? No, I didn't like that.
No, for property law or something like that. Yeah, nothing too bad.
But happy holidays to all, and we will be on next week, I believe, correct, Jay?
Yes, sans.
A little
students.
Out of touch with the schedule.
We'll be back for one last episode before we take a break.
One last podcast for the season. So anyway, we will be seeing you then, and good luck. But anyway, have a great week, folks, and we'll catch up with you next week.
That'll do it for Poll Hub this week. Poll Hub is produced by the Merit Poll at Marist University in Poughkeepsie, New York.
Mary Griffith is our executive producer.
Casey Schaff is our production supervisor.
A Poll Hub team includes AJ Gambino, Tommy Rogers, Cassie Connors, Sylvia Weiser, and Molly Goodger.
If you enjoy Poll Hub, consider telling a friend about us.
If you'd like to learn more about polling and survey science, check out the Marist Poll Academy, our free online learning portal accessible from our website.
Remember, you can always tell your smart speaker to play Poll Hub, and with any luck, it'll cooperate.
Finally, wherever you listen to Poll Hub, there is a subscribe button. Click it, and the latest episode will be ready for you in your podcasting app as soon as it's released.
We'll see you next time.